Welcome to the John Gambling Show with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Now, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
All right, here we go. It is indeed a Friday John Gambling Show. Good morning to you all. Happy Friday. And Mayor Michael Bloomberg is here in Studio 4. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, John. How are you?
I'm fine. And you?
You look very relaxed today.
Well, it's Friday.
Well, I understand that, but Friday's a working day for most of us.
Mine's
Muslims,
almost finished.
It's the Sabbath, yours but is, not for you or me.
So. Yours is just starting. Your day is just starting. Mine is almost done here. So.
Well, it's going to be a good day, actually. Got a nice event tonight with a big statue in an Italian neighborhood and a Colombian event, and, you know, we'll do all these things.
Busy. The mayor is always busy. Where do you want to start, Mr. Mayor? You want to start with
Albany? Well, yesterday, Washington.
Oh, Washington. You were down there.
Absolutely.
Singing the praises of Judge Sotomayor?
Yeah, and I think rightly so. I mean, this is a qualified woman. She's competent. I don't agree with her on everything. I agree with her on a lot of stuff, but not on everything. In fact, she has ruled against the city in a number of big lawsuits.
And you still went down and waved the flag.
John, you'll never find a judge or a human being. Do you and Wendy, your wife, agree on everything?
No.
Okay, so, I mean, you're not, you know.
We still speak to each other.
Absolutely. Why Wendy does that, I don't know. I'll have to call her and ask. But you're not going to agree with everybody on everything. But I think the question is, and I pointed out to the senators that I've appointed over 140 judges in the last 7.5 years to family court and criminal court. And I don't agree with everything on every one of them. But I always ask a very tough question that there is no good answer to. And then see what they would do. And, you know, there's no good answer, but they have to make a decision. So that's it. And, you know, how did you arrive at that? Is it a rational ways to do it? And I think Sotomayor is is very smart. She's done a lot of work here in the city, a lot of cases, written a lot, has the temperament for it. I happened to have dinner with her 2 days before she got appointed. Totally an accident. The president did not call me and tell me he was going to appoint her. And if he did, I wouldn't tell you, but he didn't. But it was interesting. It was, some cases, the big case they kept talking about was the firefighter case.
Yeah, New Haven, yeah.
And in fact, what New York City did is very different. New Haven, if I understand it, gave the test. The results looked like they came under Title VII, were disproportionately in one direction rather than another. So rather than defend it, they walked away from the test, canceled the test. Those who had passed the test sued and eventually won in the Supreme Court. What we've done in New York City is we've tried to work very hard, and Scapetta and Cassano and McNally, all these guys deserve a lot of credit at the fire department. We worked very hard over the last 7 years to explain to people this is a great career and to get more people from all parts of the city to apply and to take the test, and then let the best ones win.
Yeah, best man win.
Right, and then, but we didn't walk away. In fact, we're being sued by the Justice Department in a class action suit, and I've chosen, rather than to cave to them, to defend the 1999 and a 2002 test that we gave. We argue that the test was job-related, and the results are the results. We just didn't have as many people taking the tests to get the kind of results that some people would like. And we're working on that. And the case will come to trial in a while, sometime this year, mm-hmm. in the fall. And hopefully we'll win. But, you know, I didn't want to walk away from those who took the test and passed.
I'm curious about your appearance down in Washington yesterday. I was just thinking about it. Who asked you to appear?
I think the administration might have, but I'm not sure. I don't remember.
Okay.
They might have.
I was wondering whether it was the candidate who might have looked for support from various people.
I think that, you know, even if the candidates in any of these cases do, they would not make the call themselves. I went down and testified. There was a woman who was up for an appointment, which she got for the Deputy Secretary of Homeland Security, a woman, Jane Lute, who was a major in the Army, a great career in the Army, went to work for the United Nations, running part of the Peace Corps. If there's ever a tough, smart woman who shows you can do it all, she's got a great husband who's a general in the White House, was there under Bush, and Obama's kept him on. She had young kids, and, you know, one of these people that does everything. And she was appointed, and I called her and said, you know, because some people, there's a few, there were some senators on a committee she had to go be in front of doesn't like the United Nations. And so I called them and I said, look, forget about whether you like the United Nations. I happen to think better to talk, even no matter how many times I disagree with the United Nations, I'd rather have them than not. And if we're going to have them anyplace, have them here where they're good for our economy. And I said, I'd be happy to testify. And he said, well, why don't you come down? And so I did testify.
I was just curious from an operational standpoint.
I think in this case, Stu just reminded me, it was the administration that called us and asked for me to come down. But I was happy to do that. Because I know her. And I have a lot of friends who are judges and lawyers who say this really is a capable woman. And, you know, some of the people say, well, she's too liberal, she's too conservative. And the liberals say she has been upheld by 90% of the Republican-appointed judges in the federal court. So, you know, every judge, you want a judge who, if they never get overruled, they're not trying. And if you agree with them, Ed Koch, I love it, Ed said one time, if you agree with them 90% of the time, you're brilliant. And if you agree with them 100% of the time, you should see a shrink.
Well, and he knows of what he speaks. No, I think that she's...
And he's doing it, for those who want, incidentally, last Friday, Patty Harris and I went to see him. Or I think it was
recovering
Thursday.
From his operation?
Recovering. He's still got to get his gallbladder out. At his age, it's a struggle. But somebody said to me afterwards, well, how was he? Well, the next day he called to apologize for talking for so long. We had a great meeting.
He's fine then. Or near fun.
He's near fun.
He's near fun. I'm glad to hear that. Always a good friend of mine as well. 15 minutes after 8 o'clock. Let me take my first break here, Mr. Mayor. Let me also remind everybody that before the end of the program, we will open up our phone lines. They are open right now. You're encouraged to call if you've got a question for Mayor Michael Bloomberg. 800-321-0710. 321-0710. Get in line early so that your questions can be answered. All right, here we are, just about 20 minutes after 8 o'clock Friday morning. Mayor Michael Bloomberg is here. So what's with the gang up in Albany and mayoral control? I think they're going to walk away from it.
I don't know. It would be... I mean, it's just, you know, nobody could conceive of us being in this situation. I actually... It's sort of the same subject. Clive Haberman wrote a column in Today's Times... and he sometimes, I don't agree with him on some things, a lot of the times, sometimes yes, sometimes no, but he wrote a column about the new guy that the governor wants to appoint to run the MTA.
Jay Walder.
And I met Walder the other day for the first time. Very competent guy. I haven't done any research on his background, but just looking at his resume and talking to him, this guy
looks like a lot of experience in this.
Very qualified guy. And how you get somebody, keep in mind, elections are against who's ever running, not against God, and who you can get, and appointments are compared to who else you could get to do the job. Running the MTA, given it's a punching bag, and this enormous amount of mythology that's built up, or just people say things knowing full well it's not true. There's this allegation about two sets of books and all this sort of stuff. It's all made up stuff. And the people that say it know it's made up, or if I don't know which is worse. They either know it or they just don't understand. Which is worse is not clear. Anyways, he pointed out the same thing's going to happen with that guy. There's a small group of people who want to use the power to hold up an appointment to further their own agenda. And I cannot, for the life of me, understand what the agenda is of the people. There were 15 people last night who voted for a bill which would end all of the progress that we've made in the schools in terms of bringing down crime and improving test scores and graduation rates and bringing down the dropout rate. And you wonder what goes through their heads. And they all come from neighborhoods where the improvements in the schools have been dramatic. And you wonder what on earth they are thinking about in terms of voting for a bill that would literally end all of that. The other thing that's I don't quite understand is they passed last night with great fanfare, without any public discussion, and in the middle of the night at 2 in the morning, a bill that would change the rules. One of the great changes to open up the process is to let anyone bring a bill to the floor. So if that's the case, now we have the opportunity, the Democrats who did not vote for this bill, the ones who really want reform, pretty much left, led by Jeff Klein and Liz Krueger and a few others, they can bring this to the floor. And this bill, the bill that we negotiated with the state Senate and with the state assembly, would pass overwhelmingly. And all they've got to do is exercise their power. Now, if they say, oh, they're not in session, they can demand that the governor bring them back. They can show up if they want to. I don't know why all the, a majority of the senators, if they wanted to, couldn't just show up and say, we're here. Now, I don't know what legally you can do, but the governor can certainly force the issue. And we just got to do something. You've got a bill that every, the vast majority of even the Democrats agree is the right thing to do. And it's being held up by a small group of people. And they say, oh, well, you know, the administration won't negotiate. This is just total bull. We negotiated, number one, for 7 years we've known we had to do this. Number two, we negotiated with the Senate and the Assembly. The Assembly chose to stop negotiating. The Assembly went ahead, got some things in the bill they wanted. The Senate said, well, let them do it because we're not going to waste our time. We're too, and that's exactly what happened. Then they come back, and it's an old Albany trick of no matter how, once you get to everything, we're going to negotiate, you give me your stuff, and then I'm going to ask for more. And just time to do that stuff over. It stopped. It's just, you can't do that. There's some point here, democracy just has to stop and say, enough, we aren't going to take it anymore. And we have tried to address their concerns, most of which are in this assembly bill. They're addressed, they didn't, maybe they didn't even read
it. The Senate needs to pass the assembly bill for it to become law, correct?
That is correct, and the governor would have to sign it.
Correct. But, I mean, they can't make up a different bill and then
if they make up a different bill, it's the same thing as having no bill.
No bill, exactly.
That's right. They do that. Those are called one-house bills. And the rules in the in Albany are designed deliberately so they have this facility. If you want something, they can, and I don't want it, and they're trying to please both of us, they'll say, John, we're going to bring it up. But they pass a bill with one word difference from the other house's bill.
And then
they say to, and they say to Mike, don't worry about it, Mike. We'll pass the bill, but it won't go into effect. Wink, wink. Just be quiet, and you'll get what you want. You won't get this bill passed. And that's exactly right. They pass, change one word, and there's no provision for a conference the way they have in Washington.
All right, back to your question, your rhetorical question at the beginning of this conversation. What can it be that Sampson and some of the others that are balking at this, what do they want? What do they say they want?
I think the only thing I can think of is they want to ruin the schools. I mean, this guy, Tom Duane, who's a, I've always thought was a smart guy, represents a district
of Manhattan, doesn't he?
Manhattan. Mm-hmm. Why he wants to go to his constituents and say, I'm deliberately trying to ruin the schools, or this Toby Stavitsky, or Joe Addabbo, who just got elected. I mean, some of these people, you wonder, you know, Hiram Montserrat, I don't know what the heck he wants. He's a former cop. He wants the cops out of the schools. He should understand. We brought crime down 44%. It's sad you need police in schools, but our teachers deserve a safe place to go to work. Our students deserve the right to be in charge of their own destiny and learn and not have other kids disrupt their classes and put them in danger. I mean, it just, you know, it just goes on and on and on. I don't know. Sampson, I've always thought, was a smart guy. He voted for mayoral control the last time. And in his district, test scores have gone up dramatically. And now he's against it, trying to push a bill that would keep Klein from being able to serve as chancellor. I don't know if in this one they keep talking about. They want to have this slush fund to train parents so that parents can disrupt the schools. Parents are supposed to be helping the teachers, working with the schools. Parent coordinators. Oh, they should be working for somebody else so that they can force the changes in schools. I want our principals and our teachers to run the classroom. They're professionals. That's why we hire them. You don't have others run it. Can you imagine we're going to have people in the streets tell our police department how to work? No, we don't want to do that.
Again, to be cynical, I'll use my words, not yours. To be cynical here, is that group that's blocking this? Are they looking to get something personally from this? I mean, to be promised something
I don't know who could promise them anything. It's sometimes you can figure out what people's motives are. This is just we're going to teach the city a lesson. We're tougher than they are. We're in charge. It's our way or the highway. And the amount of time that this we have spent negotiating, and the teachers union, in all fairness, Randy's been helpful. I mean, we could be doing so many more things. And instead, we're spending our time talking just and every time, you know, there's a point at which, if you remember Neville Chamberlain, no matter how many times you said yes, that's the starting point for the next round. There's always more, more, more. I think that just the time for that is over. This is, if the mayoral control hasn't, with the results that we've had of cutting the gap in the test scores between black and Latino kids on one hand and white and Asian kids on the other in half, if that isn't enough, if making our test scores, our kids getting close enough to the state test scores to the we may actually beat the state someday, which is inconceivable for a big city to do because we have a lot more English language learners and whatever, and special ed kids and whatever. If that isn't enough, there's no rational ways to have the discussion after that.
What's the practical aspect of this? If nothing is done, what happens?
If nothing is done, the seven-person school board made up of people that will continue the policies. They voted to give Joel Klein more power than he will have under the new bill. And at least through this coming school year, the schools will function just fine. The trouble is we'll get to that point in the future where they won't, and the old stuff will start coming back. And the time to do it is not now, not next September. There are other things that we have to do in September. We just can't keep fighting the same thing again and again and again. This is the time to do it.
Is there anything else the governor can do?
The governor can call back the state legislature every single day in Albany.
Right,
and
through the summer.
And he can send the state troopers to drag them back unless they're out of the state. And he should do that. There's a point at which I've defended the governor through all of this. He's done everything he can. He's can do now. He can do one more thing. This is what he should do. And giving them a summer off is, as we say in Gaelic, mashugana.
You're too much. Oh, my goodness. It is so important, as you've been pointing out, day after day, to the city of New York, to continue the momentum.
You know, but people phrase this as, you know, oh, the administration loses if they don't pass this bill. Administration's fine. It's the kids that lose. It's you and I lose in the context of these are going to be the voters of tomorrow who are going to take care of us and pay Social Security so you and I can retire. Those are the people who are in the schools together. They're the ones that lose.
And the very parents that complain.
The property owners, people that work in the city, it's laughable. We're joking. We are the role model for how to fix the school system, and Albany is the role model for how you can destroy it. And nobody can quite understand why. And it's a very small group of state senators. That's the thing that's the most frustrating. It's time, perhaps, for the others to stand up and say, I don't care. I am going to go up there, and whichever party is in control, whatever it is, things are more important than party or whether I get a bigger office or more perks or more member items. Maybe it's about that. I don't know. But I think it's time for everybody to call the state senator, which I have done, and I am going to call her again today and say, enough. You just can't. Go home? No. You cannot. We've elected you to do something. If this isn't something you're supposed to be doing, I don't know what is.
Have you talked to the people, the Duanes and the Samsons?
No, I've talked to my staff obviously talks to them. But, you know, as a citizen, I'm going to call my state senator again, and everybody should. And don't take this stuff, oh, they won't let me. When you ran for office, you didn't say, if you elect me, I won't be powerless. I'll have to do whatever these party bosses say. You say, if I'm elected, I'm going to do this. And I'll bet you every one of them said, I'm for better schools and I'm going to work for better schools. Okay, here's the time to work for it.
All right, Mr. Mayor, sit tight. Let's take a break on the half hour here. Don't forget, 800-321-0710. If you've got a question, we'll get some answers for you as we continue. Here we go. We continue. John Gambling here with Mayor Michael Bloomberg at News Talk Radio 710 WOR. terrible shooting yesterday. Four police officers and two perpetrators in a shootout in Jersey City.
Two of the cops are holding on, but barely our prayers are with
illegal
them.
Illegal guns. Oh. The police chief screaming yesterday.
Should scream. The Senate yesterday, one of the senators said something, joked in nice ways about Mayor Bloomberg and I probably disagree on guns. I pointed out to him I used to own a gun. I had a .22 caliber rifle when I was in the Boy Scouts, target practice. And then I was actually a member of the NRA, little known fact. Somebody, we don't know who, gave me a gift membership, which expired on December 31st. I didn't renew it. I thought that would be a little bit hypocritical, but for 1 year, I had the card in my pocket. I kept waiting for people to ask.
Card-carrying member.
I wanted somebody to say, well, we are the NRA, and we stand for this, and I was going to pull out my card and say, well, I'm a member of the NRA, too, and I don't know. We could never figure out who it was that gave the gift. And I'm a big defender of the Second Amendment. I think there's nothing wrong with the right to bear arms, but the federal laws that prohibit selling guns to criminals and to young people, children, and we should enforce those laws. And I think also in dense urban areas, the rules really should be different. These people that want to arm kids on campus, maybe they never went to school. But when you and I were in school, I can't speak for you, but I will. You shouldn't have had a gun, and neither should I. Right?
No, absolutely.
Absolutely right.
Considering the behavior that was going on.
Right, or in parks or public places. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
A statistic I read this week, the 372 gun crimes committed in this city, the guns came from Virginia.
Yeah, we have pretty good gun laws in New York State and pretty good enforcement. So there are some, but generally the New York gun dealers are responsible and ethical. But in the South, there are states I've always loved, Pennsylvania, Virginia, South Carolina, I think. There's a couple of other states, and they call it the Iron Pipeline. Coming up Route 95, that this is where all the guns come up here. Some of the states, I've always loved Pennsylvania, has a law, you'll love this. It doesn't have to do with guns, it has to do with fireworks. And incidentally, fireworks this year, I think we had zero or one injury this year. We used to have hundreds of injuries.
Absolutely,
It's really amazing. You know, people say, I don't care. Yeah, well, if it was your kid, you would care. Anyways, Pennsylvania has a law. You can't write this stuff, where it's illegal to sell fireworks to people who live in Pennsylvania because it's dangerous, but they can sell them to out-of-staters.
Well, they don't care. They don't live in the state, so why do they care?
Can you imagine us doing something like that? You'd be rightly so hung out to dry. It would be unbelievable.
Were you sideswiped with the State Department's change of position on the taxes that foreign diplomats pay your embassies?
You know, for 150 years they've had on their website that our position is their position. Hillary worked very hard to help us when she was a senator. My sister is working with the State Department. I think what they feel is that they may be getting overseas tax exemptions, and they're worried about those going away if they take away tax exemptions here for other countries. I don't see that. And in any case, if we're violating laws over there, we shouldn't get special breaks. The issue is an embassy or a consulate does not have to pay property taxes on property used for their official functions, official business. But if it's for housing, or for a store or a nightclub or whatever else they want to do, that's a commercial thing and they should pay taxes on it. And, there was this when we wanted to end all the abuse of diplomats parking in front of fire hydrants and the corners and crosswalks. The argument was, oh, well, it would be a disaster for us overseas if you take away their right to do that here. We took it away with help from the State Department. Colin Powell was the Secretary General then. And today you have virtually no embassy or consulate cars. It's a handful, but they don't get tickets any more than you and I do. And they don't park in fire hydrants or at corners anymore. And last I heard, America was still able to conduct its foreign policy overseas. It turned out that is not because all we got to do is tell our members of our State Department, don't violate local laws. And the local laws don't keep you from doing your job. It's if you can't park close to your office in the street, so what?
It also seems sort of ludicrous that we're worried about paying property taxes overseas, wherever that might be, when we give away just hundreds of billions of dollars in foreign aid. I mean, what could these property taxes
In this case, there was, I think it was Hungary, had written a check for $30-odd million and then held it up. Well, I mean, this is going to cost us $250 million. Do you know how many cops and firefighters and teachers we can have for $250 million? Do you know how many member items they can have in Albany for $250 million?
City Council, Miguel Martinez, admitting yesterday that he was putting in his pocket.
You know, he's people liked him. He was a pleasant guy. I was as shocked as anybody else. It's an outrage. I've always thought if you steal from the public, it's worse than stealing from an individual because you're stealing from everybody. And hopefully the judge will make, as a punishment and as a an incentive for others to not steal from the public trough. You know, what he did, fortunately, we found out about it. The Department of Investigations investigated, and that's where it came from. You know, you can say, well, it should never have happened, should never have been allowed to happen. It should never have happened in terms of allowed to happen. That's what you have Department of Investigation and others for, and fortunately caught him.
Jobless rate in New York City, estimated in the newspapers this morning, 9.5%, kind of catching up with the rest of the country.
Yeah, I mean, all these numbers are numbers. The jobless rate, unemployment rate, isn't the best measure of whether or not the economy is doing better or worse, because when the economy starts doing better, the economists will tell you that more people start looking for jobs, and so they join the unemployment lines. I think the unemployment rate is better measure of people who are struggling. Everybody that's unemployed on the unemployment rate needs our help. They need a hand up, not a handout, and that's what we're trying to work on. But the good news is that behind those numbers, job growth in the city is doing a little bit better. And so in the long term, that's what's going to provide the jobs for the unemployed. But, you know, every day when I ride the subway, you talk to people. When I walk on the streets, you talk to people. And they are struggling, and it is troublesome, and we've got to focus on that. But we can sit here and we can complain and pander, or you can try to do something. Our small business services unit is training people for jobs. If you are unemployed, you call 311 and see whether our small business service unit can find you a position. And we're trying to train people for those industries that are growing, but also make sure that we keep the people in the city, they don't have to leave the city, because when the other industries come back, we want to make sure that there are people there to take those jobs.
On the national scene, healthcare is first and foremost for this week, and certainly first and foremost for the president. The way there are some suggestions on it being paid impact New Yorkers.
Well,
probably as onerously as anybody.
There's two things are true. You can either cut services, or you got to raise revenues. And revenues can be in a variety of ways, and services can be in a variety of ways. Everything on both sides is painful, and rethinking what we're doing is really where we should start. But, you know, no hospital, nobody wants to have a small hospital close, and it may be we don't have the hospitals in the right place. We're in the state, we had this Burger Commission to actually do something without, and we've lost a couple hospitals in Queens, and I'm not happy about that. It hurts. I want to make sure our public hospitals can pick up the slack. But if you had a hospital in your neighborhood, you're not going to be happy if you got to go, you know.
My point was more to the tax rate on New Yorkers, which would be estimated close to 60%, possibly.
Taxes are disincentives for economic growth. No argument about that. Having said that, if you want to have cops and firefighters and teachers and everybody else, you're going to have taxes. Then the question is how much and on whom? And, you know, 50% of the tax filers don't pay taxes. They have zero or a negative tax rate, in fact. It's very concentrated. But we've got the average middle-class person in this city is paying an awful lot in taxes. And it hurts. And we've got to do two things. One, make sure that at least to the extent that the government takes their money, we spend it wisely and efficiently and on things that benefit everybody or most people. You can't, not everybody's going to like every program. And the second thing is try to make sure we're not taking any more than we absolutely have to. But I think this argument that the House bill has some taxes, even the president has said, and Nancy Pelosi I saw yesterday said, we're rethinking some of that because the Senate will not go along with that at all. So it's a long ways. But you got to ask yourself, I come back to the same fundamental question, are we doing the right thing? In Europe, they spend $2,000 or $3,000 less per capita every year on health care. They have a life expectancy 2 or 3 years longer, numbers like that. Why? Are we doing the right thing? The trouble is when you ask that question, there's no easy answers, and some of it may be, you know, John, I'm sorry, you can't have that test. I've always thought until you have tort reform, you will not solve.
It's all part of it.
You are a doctor and have a family to support and you've worked your life to become a doctor and have these big debts, and you know that, God forbid, something happens, the jury is just going to say, doctor, why didn't you test? And you say, well, we can't afford all these tests, or that was test was given by somebody else. Well, it turns out that test wasn't good. You should have done it yourself. And we say, oh, doctor, don't waste all this money. And then we don't protect the doctors if they do it.
No, you're absolutely right, Mayor. Let's take our final break here. We've got a full bank of phones. We will get to your questions, and we will do that next.
Mayor Mike and John Gambling on News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
All right, Mr. Mayor, let's go right to the telephones. Grab your earpiece right there, if you would, and we are going to go to line number one, Frank in Flushing. Frank, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you today?
Good, Frank.
Your question, please, Frank.
I have a problem. Mr. Bloomberg, you claim to be for democracy, and you badmouth the Senate. But the Senate has legitimate points of view, such as having a non-veto-proof majority on your educational body. So who are you who's overturned term limits to show yourself once again to not want a group of people...
Okay, Frank. Frank, we've spent 7 years talking, and we spent lots of months talking to the Senate in terms of getting their input and trying to craft a bill that satisfied their concerns. We did it with the Assembly. They passed the bill overwhelmingly. They were happy, and the Senate could have been. The Senate just walked away from it. And in terms of vetoing, we have a veto. Number one, it's at the voting booth. You'll have your opportunity on November 3rd, and hopefully I'll get your support. But, you know, maybe I'll have to work a little bit harder for it. Doesn't sound like you're thrilled. But nevertheless, it's you don't take every single policy and put it up to a vote. Mayoral control is control by one person. It's so that all the agencies work together, and the focus is on helping, in this case, the kids or whatever a particular agency is designed to do. The results are there. And in the olden days, the problem was that nobody was in control. There was a veto over everything. And that doesn't get you a good education for your kids, but thank you.
Okay, Jack in Manhattan, you've got the ear of the mayor. Question, please.
Mr. Mayor, I was just wondering, you know, my office is across from Union Square, and I see people all the time trying to eat, and they're with their children, and people are just smoking cigars and cigarettes right in their faces. Isn't it strange that you can have smoking in a park? Is there anything around that we could do about that?
Well, generally, our smoking laws are built around the fact that secondhand smoke is dangerous, and if there are employees have a right to a workplace that is safe. So, for example, if asbestos in the air, we wouldn't let you work there. We'd close it down till you cleaned up. Same thing, carcinogens from smoking. Outdoors, there are some of our public health people say that it's dangerous and that there is a higher incidence of secondhand smoke damage as you walk through the people smoking outside the buildings. It would be harder to build a consensus. And generally, I don't think that, you know, we could get it done. I just, when I look at the people out there, I think, you know, why are they doing it? Because they're killing themselves, but that's their point. And, you know, Union Square really has gotten so much better. There's a woman, Jen Falk, who used to work for us in the city, and now she's president of the Union Square bid, and she really is doing a great job. The construction's almost done. It's going to be spectacular when they get that done, and hopefully people won't. You know, also, you can say to them, hey, excuse me, you know, my kids, can you just, the wind's coming in this direction. Can you move your table? Maybe that'll get him to do it.
All right, Danny in Rockaway's on line four. I'm almost out of time here.
Okay.
He wants to say thank you for the lifeguards in Rockaway.
Danny, you're welcome. It's easier to get lifeguards when the economy's down. Maybe that's one of the things, but we do have
plenty. I gather there were
tons
of people.
Please, don't go into a pool. Don't go into the ocean unless there's a lifeguard present. No swim is worth risking your life.
It sounds like a weekend where swimming in Rockaway is going to be the thing to do.
Yeah, but the tides, the currents are really strong. I don't care how good a swimmer you are. Don't go without a lifeguard.
All right, Mr. Mayor, that's going to do it for us. We're out of time. Thank you very much, and we'll see you next Friday.
Looking forward to
it. Enjoy the week ahead.